Welcome to Beauty for the Soul, sharing the secrets to finding the beauty and harmony within yourselves and the world around you. Now here's your host, Marjorie Rothstein.
Hello and welcome everyone to Beauty for the Soul, because experiencing beauty is not just a luxury anymore, it's a necessity. Today I'm so excited to be here with world-renowned author Lois Stern. She's a popular author, presenter, and innovator. Her book, Sex, Lies, and Cosmetic Surgery, became a favorite for patients and surgeons alike, and a groundbreaker in many ways. Lois was totally candid in opening up about some taboo subjects related to cosmetic surgery and their impacts on women, not just in the workplace, but in the bedroom as well. She followed up with a second book, TikTok Stop the Clock, Getting Pretty on Your Lunch Hour, to explore the less invasive paths to beauty. So, Lois, I'm so thrilled to have you on the show. You open the first chapter of your book, Sex, Lies, and Cosmetic Surgery, with a hysterical joke of a woman's out-of-control behavior after her facelift. I just love that story, and I don't know if it's taboo to share it with our readers, but why did you start the book that way?
Well, first, Marjorie, let me say hi to you, and thank you so much for allowing me to be a guest on your show. It's a pleasure. Why did I start the book that way? Interestingly enough, at that time, I was working with an agent in New York City, and she had an editor on staff. And, of course, the editor went through every inch of the book, and she called me one day, and she said, Lois, that joke is so hysterical. I had it buried in the third chapter, What Can You Expect After Cosmetic Surgery? She said, I want you to figure out a way to take that joke and start the book with it. Well, she was so right, and it was a great joke. So it sort of set the tone, and the tone was very much about the interrelationship between cosmetic surgery, when it goes well, and sexuality.
Yes, yes. Well, it's so funny because I'm a writer as well, and editors have a whole different POV. And it was so captivating. Do you feel comfortable sharing that, or maybe we should just move on?
Well, that's up to you. You can share it if you like, well, or I'll chime in.
You know, let's move on a little bit. And then
sure.
I think I'd rather have people buy the book and get that joke in there, because I'm telling you, it's worth just getting the book for that joke.
For that joke?
Let's
you know, the funny thing, Marjorie, about that joke is that a friend of mine sent it to me via email. And, of course, I howled and I laughed and I called her. And she said, oh, I'm so glad you took it that way. I was afraid you were going to be insulted.
Well, I think because of some of the listeners here on this station, it may be out of the norm range. So let's move on. But everybody
sure.
needs to get this book for that joke. So probably the most taboo subject you addressed head on in Sex, Lies, and Cosmetic Surgery was the issue of transference. And I know that psychologically happens with therapists, you know, and all kinds of people who are in need of help and are vulnerable. Can you explain to our listeners in simple terms what this means?
Sure. You know, when I was an educator many years ago, before I had heard that term, before I started working so closely with the psychologists, I remember saying to one of them, what does that mean, transference? And she said, well, very simply, it's falling in love with your therapist. Well, this was the same feeling of falling in love with my plastic surgeon. But it was, Marjorie, first of all, I have to tell you, I've been married to the same man for many, many years. We met in college.
You're so blessed. Lucky you.
And he was really my first real sexual experience and has been the only one. So for me to feel those kind of feelings so intensely was so out of character for me.
Mm. That's so interesting. And you devoted two full chapters to the topic. So was it hard for you to share that kind of information?
Yes and no. It was very hard for me to decide that I wanted to share it. And that's a whole story in itself, why I wanted to share it. Once I decided I wanted to share it, in a way, it was the easiest chapter to write because everything I said that day, everything I felt that day was so indelibly ingrained in me that it could pour right out. On the other hand, as I sat and typed, the tears just streamed down my face. It was painful to write it because I was embarrassed. I was so embarrassed.
Right. And again, I want to leave some of the mystery of your book to our listeners to get the book, because these are things that are so compelling and very, very interesting. And I do want to add, I knew a friend, I had a friend of mine a long time ago who had a couple of surgeries done. And one of the doctors, she would go in and kind of flirt with him and, you know, and it was kind of strange because I know she wanted to get like extra stuff done. And she thought maybe if he thought she was pretty, he would give her a deal.
Well, the one thing that I will share, and the reason I did two full chapters, one was my own experience, and it was the day I spoke to my plastic surgeon, and I told him what I was feeling.
Yes.
And I thought that he would be able to help me through it. I could, and he's a very, very warm person. He's not standoffish at all. He's very, very refined, but fun. You know, he's not he's not a standoffish kind of person. And yet, when I started to talk to him, I could see his discomfort.
Yes.
He never took his eyes off me.
Yes.
He answered me, but he, I could see from the corner of my eye as I was talking to him, he just took his hand and pushed the door wide open. And that told me a lot.
Thought, well, that's what happens. You know, it's probably happened so many times. Well, this woman, actually, I think she went after the guy to sue him after because, you know, she was, I don't know, she was into suing people anyway, but I understand.
Yeah. Well, the truth is that by the time I left, I felt so small. I came home, my whole body was shaking. And I went and I took a couple of Excedrin to calm me. And I called a very dear friend of mine. We had been colleagues together. She was a psychologist in the school district where I worked. And I said, Lorraine, I've got to talk to you because I just didn't understand what was happening. And I didn't like it, and yet I loved it. On the other hand, it was, you know, a dual feeling. And she met with me, and we talked for a long time, and she really set me straight. She made me understand. And the next time I saw my surgeon, he brought me into another room, and he sat behind a desk, and I think he was just waiting to hear. You know, he just couldn't quite figure it out himself, and I told him that I had met with his friend and, you know, how she explained things to me. He just listened.
Yeah.
But I realized that surgeons or doctors are rarely trained and have the ability to handle these kinds of situations.
Of course.
I think they're better able to handle a situation when a woman flirts with them.
Yeah.
But this was intense. And when I wrote that other chapter, You Might Fall in Love with Your Plastic Surgeon, I said, I gave it to him. And I said, I want you to read this, because I want to be sure that I don't hurt you.
Yes.
And he, you know, I didn't see him for a while. When I came back the next time, I said, well, he never brought it up. And I said, did you read my chapter? And he said, yes, I did. And I said, how do you feel about my including this in the book? And he was so nice. He's just a nice person.
Yeah.
He said, Lois, that was your experience. You're entitled to write about your experience, he said, but I want to ask you something. Are you sure you want to? Because he knew I was opening myself up for a lot. And I said, I really do for one reason. I think a lot of women go through this and they don't have any support for it.
Yes.
And he said, do you really think so? I said, yes, I do. So, and the truth is that I have gotten emails from people from around the world.
Yes.
About, and one woman said she just Googled the words falling in love with your plastic surgeon. And she said, when my book popped up, she was so excited, and she ordered it right away. And she said, you don't know how much you have helped me. And she said, because I, too, spoke to my surgeon. And what did he say to me? Don't worry, you'll get over it. And the truth is, you do get over it, but that's no answer. And in that chapter, I really wanted to help surgeons. What do you say?
Right.
What? How do you confront this in a nice way?
Right.
And I gave them all the steps.
So
she said she ordered a second book and gave it to her surgeon and said, be sure you read chapter, whatever it was, three or four.
That is so amazing. And Lois, I know just from speaking with you that you're a very refined woman of class. And so for you to have that experience and share it with people, you know, in LA, everybody's kind of, you know, looking for something. And the doctors here, most of them, I don't know them, but a lot of them don't have the integrity and, you know, whatever. I'm sure they don't want to get sued. But, you know, it's like, it's just rare to find a really high level doctor who really, really, you know, knows boundaries, you know, impeccably. And so I really admire you for taking that risk. And your doctor sounds like he has excellent boundaries. And the other part of it is maybe he's like that with everybody. You know, maybe that's one of his limitations in his own relationship. And sometimes I think that if the doctor can't help you with that, maybe they should have someone in the office who is one of the patient coordinator or something.
Right.
That I think that would even be better, because a lot of doctors don't even want to touch the subject.
I absolutely agree with you that somebody on staff who feels comfortable with this kind of thing should be trained to speak to the patient. And all the doctor has to say, and I said this in that chapter too, that, you know, if the doctor doesn't feel comfortable or doesn't feel they want to get into that, they can just say something simple like, this is something that does happen with some of my patients, and I think it would be good for you to set up an appointment with and name whoever it is on their office staff to talk about it a little bit. I think she can make you feel better.
Excellent. Excellent. Mm-hmm. I didn't even see that. It just came to me, but that's excellent. And you know, there's all these inner workings. I mean, there could probably be a movie about this. I'm sure there was.
That's funny.
Well, then you remember Nip Talk, one of my favorite shows.
Oh, yes. I sure do remember it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's mm-hmm. really amazing. What are some of the other highlights of this book?
Other highlights. Well, I think one of the things that probably was a highlight for most people is that at one point, I shared my entire story, not in addition to that part, from my early ambivalences, and I did have a lot of ambivalences about even doing this. And frankly, if it hadn't been for an optic nerve that was hit with a virus that caused my right eye to close, I never would have sought out plastic surgery.
Oh my goodness.
So it wasn't until I started that I went to ophthalmic surgeon first.
That's not an easy word.
No, and had him look at it. And, you know, while I was sitting in his office, I started looking at the brochures and seeing some of the things that could be done. And I thought, gee, you know, while I'm under anesthesia, maybe I should do some more. As my husband said, it's like, you know, you want to replace the cabinets in your kitchen, and before you know it, you've done a whole remodeling job.
Yes.
So that's what started me on that quest. And I said to the ophthalmic surgeon, well, do you think you could do anything about this? And I'm showing him my lower gels, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, now you're talking facelift. He said, I don't do that. But why don't you just do your eyes? That will give you a refreshed look. But that's what set me kind of thinking about it. And I did. I went for a couple of consultations. There was one that I just thought was terrible. I would never use him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I finally found this doctor that I just thought was wonderful in every way. And he recommended something that nobody else had recommended, because Marjorie, I think growing up I always felt that I had a big nose.
Oh.
And it made me like not not horribly uncomfortable about it, but uncomfortable enough so that when I was dating, if I went to a show or a movie or a concert, I would always sit and face my date full face until the lights went down. I can remember that.
Wow.
So I did have that feeling that I had a big nose and I didn't like my profile. It didn't stop me from doing anything, you know, but it was just a feeling. Well, when I went to this last plastic surgeon, and he was showing me some pictures of work he had done, and I looked at one, and I said, "Did you do something to this woman's nose?"
Yeah.
And he said, "No." And then he said, "Oh, you know, you're right, just the tip of her nose."
Oh.
And I said, "Well, how come you never said anything about my nose?"
Yeah.
Not that I was going to have my nose done at that stage, but I was just curious.
Yeah.
And he said, he turned my head profile again, and he said, "Your nose is fine. Leave it alone."
Oh, my goodness.
Now, most doctors would say, "Oh, yes, I could do this or
that."
Oh,
my goodness.
But he looked at me again. He said, "What I would really love to do for you is a chin implant."
I was just going to say that.
I had never even heard of a chin implant.
I was just going to say that because to balance out a prominent nose, you have to have the proper chin. And,
right.
You know, rather than paring down the nose, he wanted to get your jawline proper.
That's right. And he said, "That will make a world of difference in your profile." Well, I never knew that my chin was not, you know, the right proportion. I went home, I went into the bathroom, and I held up a mirror to my wall mirror, and I cupped a hand over my chin, and I said, "I'll be darned, I never realized that." I guess I just never studied my face enough to realize that, and that's what sold me. I said, "That's what I want."
Brilliant. You know, I have a background. I'm a sculptor and I've studied anatomy for years. So I'm always looking at stuff. And that is one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard, because out in LA, everybody has, like, remember when we were kids? Do you remember there was that Dr. Diamond? He used to make everybody have a nose that looked like it was stuck up.
Like a pig.
Yeah.
Pig. I said it's a pig nose. Right. I know. I agree with you. You know, I went to a summer camp where I was from Long Island, but most of the people were from the city. And we got so that we could identify which doctor did whose nose.
Yes,
because
yes.
They had their signature noses.
Yes, yes, yes. Just curious, which camp did you go to?
So getting back to when you said, what are some of the other highlights of the book? I did go through those ambivalences because I had a lot of them. I didn't feel like, well, here's how I handled it in the book. I started to think about what would my mom say if she were alive today, you know. No, she was still alive, I'm sorry, but she wasn't in a good state at that point where I could talk to her. What would she say? And she was just always such a lady, and she never imposed her feelings on me, but she was subtle. And so I repeated what she would have said, and it would have been something like, "Lois, I've always had such respect for your intelligence. This doesn't even sound like something that you would ever do."
Yeah.
If you want my advice, forget it. That would be my mom. My dad, on the other hand, and I wrote all this in the book, and it just showed all the ambivalences I was going through. My dad would do, "What? You're going to go through surgery for no reason at all? Mm-hmm. People do everything they can to avoid surgery, and you're doing this." And then it would be the money. How much is this going to cost you?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You could buy bonds for your grandchildren and do something useful with your money instead of, you know, that would be his take on it.
Yeah.
So that showed all the ambivalences that I was going through. And then I spoke to a friend who said, "Lois, how old is your mom? 90-something?
Yes.
Look at all the years you could have to enjoy it."
Yes.
And she sort of, you know, gave me some encouragement to do it.
Well,
so that was one of the ambivalences that I felt. It took me a while to get through that. And then who do I tell? How do I tell?
Well, I think it was very brave of you. And, you know, coming from parents of another generation, you know, it was only those super vain women, you know, in those days that had their something done and, you know, in their 50s and stuff. But, you know, we're in the 21st century and we have access to all kinds of new technology and things are much better than they were.
And also safer.
Yeah.
Surgery is much safer today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that makes a difference too. But I do have my pictures in there, Marjorie.
Yes.
You might have seen that.
Yes.
From before to day one after surgery, day two. And I wrote, that's what I was doing during my recovery time. I was writing. So that every feeling was fresh. And I expressed them as I was going through the different things. But it was mostly elation later on.
That is so amazing. And yeah, I see the pictures. I'm looking at them right now. And I see how you would have felt with your nose. But, it goes along with the moves that he did, you know, and the curves that he did. And how many years ago did you have this done?
How many years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, quite a few now. Let's see, about 11?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is so amazing. It's really,
yeah.
I love seeing the photos because they're about you and people are getting to know you. You know, when you see these mug shots in the doctor's office, it's just sort of, I don't know, it doesn't have the same feeling as when you're connected with someone and you really get to see their story. It's like a personal friend.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other stuff in the book that I think is very valuable. A lot of just, you know, good advice about how to seek out a surgeon and,
right.
And what to avoid and how to handle. There's some women who just don't want to tell that
yeah.
they have had surgery.
And, yeah.
And there's some very funny stories in there about people who made up all kinds of excuses for why they were bruised and from the airbag that exploded. You know, there's funny stories in there.
Geez.
So, and, you know, it's up to that individual what they want to share. And I think today things are so much more open.
Well, except for movie stars, they still don't want to say anything. You know, it's like I always say Susan Sarandon, who's lovely, she always had baggy eyes and
yes.
she was getting jowls and she looked lovely. But, you know, if 10 years ago she looked like that, now she looks, you know, 10 years younger than even that, you
That's
know
right.
something's been done.
And Jane Fonda is one of the few who came right out and said, I caved and I did it.
Yeah, and look at all the attention she's getting from it all. You know,
that's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have the money to do it and you don't want to do it, there's other ways of dealing with it. There's lasers and things like that, or if you're afraid, there's preventative, which I really believe in also. But I'm so excited to talk to you about this because I've always been so fascinated. I haven't had anything done. I'm one of those virgin faces, but I'm fascinated. I drive down sometimes and look in the mirror and I pull my, you know, cheeks back. And I once wrote a story called, Are You a Boomer in Search of a Facelift? You know?
And afterwards, this was kind of cute afterwards. I got a call one day from a woman who was at that time writing for the New York Times. And she wanted to speak to me about my experiences, and I asked her, how did you find me? And again, it was through Amazon, you know, just searching for books and what they were about. And she wrote an article that came out on the front page of the Sunday style section of the Times, New York and LA Times.
Yeah.
And the title was, Hey, It's Still Me in There. And I loved it. It was all about how people might treat you differently.
I do love that. That's fabulous.
Yeah, that
That's
was
fabulous.
Very cute. I enjoyed that article.
You know, Lois,
I was only one of the people featured in there, but she gave me a few good paragraphs, so that was kind of nice.
You know, I could talk to you all day, but we're heading on to the end of the interview today. We'll have to have you back on again. But now there is a special deal that Lois has put together just for the readers, and I'll put the link on the bio page. And I know you have a couple of other books that And you have a newsletter called Beauty Within, Beauty Without, What's Your Passion? Mm-hmm. And the tagline is Explore the Many Dimensions of Beauty. And I know that you want to share a little about that?
Sure. I do have a newsletter. I devote one column to beauty tips. I avoid the hype, but I go with, you know, what is the latest, not fads, but things that are tried and true. And they're not just about plastic surgery, but just about beauty tips in general and innovations in the field. And the left column, we'll just have to have another conversation, Marjorie, about that. I've been doing books on inspiring stories, and those are the inner, what I call my inner beauty stories. And they are, I'm just so excited with this project, but it's a whole other discussion.
Yes.
We'll maybe do that another time.
Oh,
but the left column is devoted to those stories.
Wonderful. Well, Lois, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you, and I want to let our readers know, please look at the bio page and sign up for the newsletter, sexliesandcosmeticsurgery.com/newsletter. I'll post everything. And keep up on it. Even if you're not going to do anything like this, it's nice to have some information on things and to learn about stuff and see what the alternatives are. And Lois, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure speaking with you.
And you too, Marjorie.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Beauty for the Soul with Marjorie Rothstein. For archived shows, downloads, and full guest bios, please visit fmgradio.com/beautyforthesoul. That's beauty, B-E-A-U-T-Y, 4, T-H-E-S-O-U-L.